Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5 year long study of the New Testament. Today's broadcast, lesson number 4 of week number 22, studying Matthew chapter 22. As we get started, these reminders. For all of our free materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. Two new books are available for download at that page. The first book, Receiving the Gift of Salvation, and the second book, Surrendering to His Lordship. Download both of these books for free today and be blessed when you read and study them. For text updates, text IGHFREE, all one word, to this number, 55222. Text IGHFREE to 55222. To study the Bible online, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org to get started, or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call toll-free 1-855-IGH-6988 for a free 30-lesson series, or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com. Let's get back into our study of Matthew 22. In our last program, we introduced the third and the final parable in the Kingdom of Heaven series that started in Matthew 21. Here, we begin to address the details of that third parable. In Matthew 22, verses 2 through 10, Jesus compared the Kingdom of Heaven to a man who arranged his son's wedding. In verse 2, the parable introduced in Matthew 22, unlike the two previous Kingdom of Heaven as Vineyard parables, compares the Kingdom of Heaven to a marriage and a wedding feast that a king had arranged for his son. The introduction of parables with the words this, followed by the model to be used in the parable, is like, followed by the spiritual teaching of the parable, that appears as standard fare in Jesus' teaching. The introductory words is like were not intended to compare the model by itself with the spiritual teaching, the spiritual application alone, but rather that the entire parable about the model paralleled the spiritual application. The point, the Kingdom of Heaven was not like the wedding by itself. The Kingdom of Heaven was like, that is, it paralleled all of the key elements that the wedding, as depicted in the parable, entailed, and entailed as Jesus intended them, not as we imagine them. In the New Testament, there are 311 references to kings, queens, kingdoms, reigns, and so forth, with at least 79 appearing in Matthew's Gospel. These terms refer to literal kings, like David, Herod, and others. But in Matthew, Jesus also uses figurative kings as central characters in his teaching, specifically in his illustrations and parables. Here, a king invited guests to a wedding, but in another context, a king forgave a large debt. We are not there yet, but as we discuss the parable in its details, it will become obvious that the king in this parable represents our gracious God. What Jesus depicts in this parable would have been standard affairs in the culture of that day. Wealthy individuals, like kings or successful merchants and landowners, often invited guests, sometimes entire communities, even countries, to festive occasions like weddings. Unlike weddings in our culture that might last less than an hour, followed by a reception of a few hours, weddings in the ancient Near East might last for days, and week-long weddings were not out of the ordinary. To receive an invitation to this sort of event was both a privilege and an inconvenience. It was a privilege to be invited by someone of great wealth and importance to attend such a momentous affair. But it was also an inconvenience in that you were expected to be there for the duration. Wealthy friends of the host could afford to attend, but the average person could not miss a week's worth of work and a week's worth of wages in order to do so. One more thing. To be invited to this kind of singular event was also an obligation. To refuse an invitation would have been to insult the king. In Matthew 22, verses 3 and 4, servants invited guests. The arrangements were explained. As part of the process, servants in the king's house would call guests to the event. This was actually the second stage of the invitation process. At some earlier point, an invitation had been extended to these guests. But, as was common in that day, though the first invitation was already offered, a specific date had not yet been set. There was an understanding that those who had been invited had already tacitly agreed to attend. When the king made final arrangements, these pre-invited guests would receive a call from the king's servants to let them know that the time had arrived. That's the call that the servants are making here in Matthew 22, verse 3. What's remarkable in this setting was that now, after having already been invited, and apparently, after having already planning to attend, these guests were not willing to come. More about that in the next verses. This introduces a tension that reminds us of the first two parables. In the first one, neither of the two sons' initial attitudes synced with their actions. The first son said to his father, "No, I won't go work in the vineyard." But afterward, he changed his mind and he went. There's the first element of tension in that parable. The second son said that he would go and work in the father's vineyard, but then he did not go. There's the second element of tension. Though both sons demonstrated attitudes and actions that were initially out of sync with each other, as well as out of sync with what God wanted, the first son who finally went and worked in the father's vineyard was the one who did the father's will. In the second parable, all of the workers who started earlier in the day were convinced that they should be, and thus that they would be, paid more than what the last hired workers received. As the parable drew to a close, that tension was obvious. And now, in this third parable in the series, the king's marriage feast for his son, something long anticipated and prepared for was about to take place. And those who initially agreed to attend were about to refuse this second follow-up invitation, the third one overall, from the king's servants. As the parable and the tension and the lessons associated with it continues to develop, we learn that some of the first pre-invited guests did not want to come. In 22:4 of Matthew, servants are sent the second time to those pre-invited guests. This represents the third time that offers have been made to them. First, the pre-invitation that, though was not explicitly recorded in this setting, was nevertheless alluded to. Second, the first call by the servants in 22 verse 3. And now third, this, the second call by other servants. Three invitations to the same group of people indicates a high level of expectation on the part of the king. He certainly wanted these people to attend the wedding of his son. That heightened expectation of the king was not just reflected in the three invitations, but also in the extended description of the affair presented as part of the second call. The dinner was prepared, the oxen and fattened cattle were already butchered, everything was ready. Those invited would have already known the extent to which a king would plan and prepare for his son's wedding. This reminder makes the king's plea even stronger, and it will prove to make their rejection that much more offensive. Matthew 22, verse 4 ends with this strong plea, "Come to the wedding." The word translated as "come," an interjection or exclamation, means "come here," exclamation point. "Come on!" exclamation point. There's usually a sense of urgency attached to the term, meaning then not just "come here" or "come on," but "come, come now." In Matthew 22, verses 5 and 6, the invited guests disregarded the invitation and they mistreated the servants. As we just saw in Matthew 22, verse 4, more servants were sent out. again with explanations of the extensive preparations that were made. Everything was prepared, so come to the wedding. The suspense in the parable builds as some of the invited guests dismiss the invitations. They made light of it, and they went their ways, while others mistreated, even killed the servants. The word translated as "they made light of it" means, according to Bauer, to have no care for, to neglect, be unconcerned. Other translations render it as "they paid no attention," or "they were indifferent," or "they ignored them," or "they took no notice." Remember, there have been 3 attempts made to get these people to the wedding of the king's son. The excuses for making light of or not paying attention to the servant's second call seem reasonable enough. After all, farms and businesses do not run themselves, and under normal circumstances, paying attention to one's own livelihood makes perfect sense, under normal circumstances. But this was not normal circumstances. When a scribe came to Jesus and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go," Jesus responded saying, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." Matthew chapter 8, verses 19 and 20. Why would Jesus respond that way? The answer? Jesus wanted this man to understand that following him required a substantial investment. It was a commitment of time, of energy, of effort, and of resources. It was a commitment that involved everything about the man's life, everything about what it meant to be a soul created in the image of God. That thought was repeated in the next few verses when another disciple said that he needed to bury his father first before he would follow Jesus. Jesus' reply, more direct but just as powerful as his previous one, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." Matthew 8, 21 and 22. The word "follow," not coincidentally but intentionally, was a command, an ongoing command. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew chapter 22. This reminder as we conclude, to start our free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.